Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
We're off to the UK now to catch up with our trivia guru, Graham Donald. How are you, Graham?
I'm super. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. Really good. So we're looking at European police forces today. Now, how did you come up with that?
Yes, well, I thought, well, we've got to start with the dung beetle, unfortunately. Now, starting back in, middle-late Rome, not ancient Rome, the slaves responsible for the removal of the rubbish and the dead from the city were nicknamed the Scarabini, like a reference to the scarab or the dung beetle, which likewise rolls away its own unedifying diet. And then in medieval, the medieval states of what would become Italy, a lot of them hired in light-mounted skirmishers from Eastern Europe, Serbs and Croats, because they worked cheap. Nothing new then. and they, when not actually fighting, they oversaw this, the rubbish details and everything. And by this time, the Scarabini has lost its initial S, so they had attracted the old nickname in the form of Carabini.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these mounted skirmishers, the massive long muskets of the day were far too cumbersome for use on horseback, so they opted for cut-down versions, which were named carbines after their owners. And when not in use, the carbine was secured to the saddle with a spring-release clip, which was called, after the owners, called a carabiner. As the spring clip, that's still the term we use for the clips used by the mountaineers.
Mm.
Now, because these mercenaries also undertook civil policing duties, their name survives in modern Italy with the police force called the Carabinieri. So they have the short rifle, the mountaineer safety clip, and the Italian police all taking their name from the dung beetle.
Isn't that brilliant?
I love that one, yeah.
Just now, amazing.
In fact, a lot of British and early European, English, sorry, and early European police forces started out as military units. And it was no different in early France, where the original detachments of what were called gendarmes, G-E-N, a separate word, D'ARMS, or men of arms, evolved into the modern gendarmerie, which actually is a force still controlled by the Ministry of Armies, because the gendarmerie has never been a civil police force. And interestingly enough, Escarabin has long been a nickname for a gravedigger in France, which also hired in brigades of Croatian cavalry mercenaries during the 30 Years' War of 1618 to 1648. And these Croatians, so they secured a lot of significant victories over the Habsburgs, resulting in their commanding officers being invited to Versailles Court with Louis XIV for a thank you party. Now, in their native tongue, the Croats called themselves, the Hrvat, which is the best.
Well done.
Sort of sounds like clearing your throat. H-R-V-A-T-S. And the most distinctive part of the Croatian officer's uniform was a loosely tied square of silk folded across the neck. And, of course, this was immediately copied by the Versailles courtiers, who called this cravat, which was the closest they could get to cravat. And of course, in time, the cravat, whittled down by fashion, became the necktie, which in my opinion is most stupid and unnecessary fashion of all time.
Not a fan.
Stupid, isn't it? Now, one of the more practical fashions to evolve from warfare was the wristwatch. Before World War One, bracelet watches, as they're called, were, quote, strictly for the birds. Men carried a pocket watch. But the coordination of artillery and infantry attacks at the front in France, it changed all that. Most popular was the Maplin and Webb campaign wristwatch. Because, of course, you had shelling the opposite side and you had your own troops advancing. Everyone had to be time aware because you didn't...
Mm.
Bombard your own troops as they move forward. The Maplin Webb campaign watch became standard issue to all British officers and NCOs who were further understanding orders, cap S, cap O, absolutely, you will wear this at all times. And when, because these guys came home, on leave, and the trend caught on in Civvy Street with the British Horological Journal noting in 1917 that, quotes, the wristlet watch was little used by the sterner sex. The sterner sex? God. Before the war, but it is now seen on the wrist of nearly every man in uniform and many in civilian attire. Close quotes. And that same year, 1917, the House of Cartier produced the first ever wristwatch. With a flat link metal strap.
Mm-hmm.
And that was inspired by the tank tracks of the tanks produced by Renault. And it was called, in fact, the first ever watch with that kind of strap was called the Tank Watch and given to General John Pershing, the American general, by the House of Cartier. And at the end of World War One, the ratio of wristwatch to pocket watch amongst men had climbed to over 175 to 1. So it was the First World War which scotched the... de-sissied the wristwatch.
Yes, I love that, de-sissied, great word.
De-sissied the wristwatch, yeah.
Brilliant.
Now, believe it or not, the petticoat also started out as military wear. Yes, imagine that, yes. Ooh, stand back. As the name suggests, it was originally a small jacket or coat, petticoat, a bit like a waistcoat.
Mm.
Which, heavily padded, was worn under the doublet as an early fort. It was like an early stab vest, basically.
Oh, how funny.
Now, by the 1400s, the early 1400s, it had thinned out a bit to be worn under armour to prevent chafing. And by the late 1400s, it had been hijacked by the women who they reduced the overall weight of the thing and affixed small hooks about the lower edge of the garment so they could append tiered skirts, which were the fashion then, and were worn outside the main gown. They weren't undergarments. You layered the skirts out over the main gown. By the 1500s, these additional layers of skirting had moved under the main and outer skirt, which was further split up the front with a big V so they could be shown off. And petticoat had shifted from the waistcoat itself to the underskirts it supported. But, yeah, petticoats, stab vest, boom. Now, with no other undergarments available to women of the time, of that era, they always went, getting risky here, commando. Ooh. Which is another expression from the military, and this time it was from the American airmen stationed in the UK during World War II.
Yes, I've always wondered this, where commando comes
commando
from. Yeah.
Now, London was obviously the big go-to destination for Yanks on leave, who nicknamed the working girls of the city the Piccadilly Commandos, as they were always ready for a spot of up-close and personal combat. in fact, the expression they used, it was a play on hand-to-hand combat, which if you move back down the alphabet to the G and add an L, put on.
I'm with you.
Right. Now, given the nature of their work, these girls saw knickers as an impediment. They weren't
just gets in the way. Unnecessary.
Yes, why am I wearing these? So they were rarely worn, hence going commando from the Piccadilly Commandos being the nickname of the working girls of Piccadilly. And many of the American planes celebrated this interaction, shall we say. There was a flying fortress of the American 508th Squadron stationed here, in the UK, and that was called the Piccadilly Commander, and there was another one called the Piccadilly Lily, both of which displayed an image of a lady on the nose cone, which Let's just say she couldn't be mistaken for a Sunday school teacher. right, now, back to the more demure ladies of the 16th century. The earliest undies for women took their name of pantaloons from 16th century Italian comedy, in which incorporated two stock figures of ridicule. One was called Gianni, the pet form of Giovanni, which was spelt Z-A-N-N-I. And that arrived in the 1580s in English as Zany. And the other was Pantaleone, the name which translates as All Lion, which was deliberately incongruous, as this character was a scheming coward. And his standard uniform, if you like, is, you know, his standard appearance on stage, always included voluminous and Turkish-style trousers gathered at the knee. So his name turned up in English as Pantaloon, and or Pantaloons, and attached to a similarly shaped women's undies. Now, interestingly enough, in Arabian comedy, which was not a genre of theatre of which I was ever aware.
No.
Oh, yes, Arabian comedy.
Where the research comes in.
Yeah. The equivalent character was identified by a grotesquely exaggerated eye makeup. So his name in Arabian comedy was Maskara, M-A-S-K-H-A-R-A-A-H, or the buffoon. And because of his eye makeup, this ended up in English as Mascara.
Oh, isn't that incredible?
And nipping back to Italy for a moment, 16th century women there resorted to a pretty dangerous practice of using eye drops of deadly nightshade to dilate their pupils and make themselves more alluring or whatever. Hence that toxic plant's alternative name, Belladonna, the Italian for beautiful lady.
Of course. I wondered where that connection was, why deadly nightshade was Belladonna. Oh,
yeah,
I
mean,
again.
God, you must have taken your life in your hands using that stuff. Anyway.
Yes.
Now, given the train of thought we now tread, there's no prizes for guessing what Miss Amelia Bloomer gave her name to. In America, and most of European countries, it has long been illegal for women to wear trousers. Centuries there were bans on women wearing trousers because of various biblical passages saying, women shall not adopt the attire that belongeth man and all this sort of rubbish. But undeterred by such sort of medieval-minded misogyny, Miss Bloomer, who was an American proto-feminist, basically, she was determined to free women from the tight corsets and massive gowns that left them incapable of doing much more than sort of smiling and drinking tea. And in the 1850s, she championed a hoot of an outfit. It was a disaster, to be fair. Sorry, Miss Bloomer, but you blew it out. It combined billowing Turkish trousers, gathered tight at the knee, which were worn under a short hooped skirt. I don't know why, which fell to the knee. And there was a tight bodice worn on the upper body, and a broad hat on the head. So if you wore one, you'd ended up looking like a double-decker mushroom. And Miss Bloomer, she attracted so much ridicule for wearing this and promoting it that she just abandoned the outfit, but not before her name had attached to women's sort of voluminous underpants of the day, and also to a glaring mistake. You know, I don't like Bloomer, that was.
Yes, Bloomers on television,
yeah. Now, that said, although the Bloomer outfit was a catastrophic mistake, the cycling craze of the 1890s saw droves of trousered women taking to the highways, and the Bloomer outfit came back in a modified form, forcing America and other countries to permit women to wear trousers if, quotes, holding the handlebars of a bike or the reins of a horse, close quotes. The overall American ban remained in place until 29th May 1923, when the Attorney General struck all this stupidity from the statute box, with the exception of the Senate, in which it remained illegal for women to appear wearing trousers until 1993. And if you think that's a bit late, the similar laws in France weren't struck from the statute books until 2013.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, I believe Catherine Hepburn in the 1930s, she visited the city and was told, you know, you can't stride around the boulevards wearing trousers. You'd have to leave, ditch the trousers or leave the country. So she went, right, gave them a few choice words and headed straight for the airport in her trousers.
Wow, isn't that incredible? As recent as that.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in Paris before and in the 19th.
That's impressive. 19th century Paris, why not?
And the police still used it as a catch-all if there was a load of rowdy females. Oh, God, touch us, we're not doing anything wrong. Oh, God, they're wearing Levi's. Round them up, bang them up and put them out and just release them in the morning. It was used as a catch-all. Right, they're wearing trousers. Round them up, they're getting rowdy.
Gosh, that's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, really bizarre.
20, that's just so recent. You can't wear trousers.
Amazing. Well, always a pleasure having you on the show. Graham Donald, thank you so much.
Nice to talk to you again.
Really, really interesting. And just remind us the title of your latest book.
The latest one, I'm in the middle of putting some together. But if anybody wants the previously published ones, any online book vendor, Amazon, Graham Donald, G-R-A-E-M-E, and Donald like the duck. There's plenty to choose from. And what I'm actually working on at the moment is quotes that never were. Totally,
Yes, yes. People think
Andy
they're
Warhol
quotes, but they're not.
Never said that we'll all be famous for 15 minutes. And all
really?
And a couple of others, which I'll discuss at another time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let us know as soon as the book is out, and then we can talk all about it. Brilliant. Graham, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to catching up again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now.